This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
Today we have Jeff Tucker as our guest. Jeff's vice president of the Mises Institute, editor of Mises.org. But today we're going to talk to him about books and about the old right. The old right was the intellectual and political movement that formed in opposition to Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal and his drive to war, composed of especially many great writers, Albert J. Nock, John T. Flynn, H.L. Mencken, and Murray Rothbard was part of this movement as a very young man, its chronicler and its promoter. He felt that this was the real origin of the libertarian movement, not the Buckleyite pro-war conservatism that developed in the 1950s. This movement, except for Murray Rothbard, went out of existence until relatively recent years. And Jeff's an expert on this movement and on some of these writers, and he's brought back their books as part of the Mises Institute's book program. All the great classics of the old right that had disappeared for decades, back as if they were brand new, influencing young people today. And it's quite an extraordinary thing. Jeff, how about telling us about, say, the works of Garrett Garrett to start, his novels as well as his nonfiction?
That's a great place to begin, Garrett Garrett. It's very interesting how, because technology is always improving, and so many things in life are always improving, and the bad goes away and the good stays, we tend to assume this is also true in the area of art and literature and political ideas. You know, the best ideas are around, so we don't need to look back in the back. You know? But it turns out not to be true. As you say, there's this enormous movement with all these fantastic writers that were so active and so fantastic, and yet hardly anybody knows about them. And why is that? It's mostly because they were stamped out by political trends, by the state, because the state won. And so guys like Garrett Garrett, who was enormously prominent in the 1930s, writing for the Saturday Evening Post, a big public pundit, and a very popular novelist in the 1920s. So we hardly know anything about him now. And now even people who identify themselves as conservatives or being on the right don't even know the name Garrett Garrett. And yet there he is. Now, he wrote 4 outstanding novels, and he began his career as a novelist, more so than a political essayist. So what was the themes of his novels? He wanted to celebrate the drama of enterprise. That was the key thing that he was interested in. Now we think of dramatic novel themes as having to do with war or crime. Well, for Garrett Garrett, what's really fascinating, what's fantastic about life, and what really deserves a great story and a great storyteller is the stuff of enterprise. It's invention, it's commerce and the great drama of commerce, and the heroism and courage that's associated with fantastic new developments. For example, the Cinder Buggy deals with the advent of steel in America and the move from the age of iron to the age of steel, you know, and it tells the story in a book that's incredibly fascinating. I mean, a real page turner. This is not just free enterprise put in fiction. This is really great fiction that happens to have the theme of what we associate with free enterprise advocacy. You know, that commerce is a tremendous template on which to draw, you know, beautiful fictional paintings, you know, and that's what he does. So that's the Cinder Buggy, and there's the Driver, which is a 19th century story of a great railroad entrepreneur that built a fantastic thing out of nothing, and then was crushed by government intervention and regulation. And by the way, all these novels are a great attack on government intervention. Oh, and let me say something about Satan's Bushel, which has an odd title. It's called Satan's Bushel, but it tells the story of the advent of futures markets at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. And so he wrote it, you know, something like in the early 1922, 1923. So he was really an observer of these events. So if you read this book, you get a picture of what it was like in the wheat pit in Chicago, you know, right before World War I. And a very vibrant picture. You really feel like you're there. So for anybody who's involved in the stock market or at all curious about this, wow, this is a tremendous story. Can you think of any other novels that, you know, cover a similar area? I can't really. Oh, another one is Harangue. This is the story about how socialism came to North Dakota. And it really did. So it's a historical fiction of a socialist takeover of a state government. And he shows the collapse calamity, you know, that was involved. Each one of these stories also has a love interest in it, you know, but an old-fashioned kind, you know, the kind that you're not afraid for your 15-year-old daughter to read, if you know what I mean. So this was the Garrett Garrett that the world knew before the New Deal. And of course, the New Deal came, and he rightly saw that the New Deal was going to wreck everything that was fantastic about the American system of economics. And he warned week after week after week in his columns about this. So he threw himself full-time into nonfiction writing after that. And, you know, it's so interesting to me that if you read his work from the 1930s during the New Deal, he turns out to have been right on issue after issue after issue. Well, for that matter, you know, he predicted the whole Great Depression, and he saw what caused it. You know, from an economic point of view, what caused it, which was excessive credit. I mean, he knew it, and he called it right. So it's just not correct that guys like FDR, you know, had no access to the correct explanation of the Great Depression that Rothbard provided many years later. No, Garrett was right there, and he was explaining to the world exactly what was going on.
You know, I also think that these days, not only is it a great novel, but Satan's Bushel is useful to read because speculators are under attack. Just as by, you know, under socialism and a communism and a Nazism, they all hate the speculator. They always want to blame economic troubles on the speculator. And Garrett, of course, shows that this is what a heroic figure the speculator is. And far from being a source of social negativism, he's a huge, huge advance in social cooperation.
But you're right. He puts the reader on the side of the producer. Yeah, on the side of enterprise, on the side of the person of action, the man of action, and that's a great thing because you know in our world we tend to think of everything from our own point of view as consumers or something. We don't look at it from the point of view of the drama from the business side, and that's always the essential core of his story. It's always looking at it from the point of view of the wealth producer among whom is the speculator.
Another great figure of the All Right is John T. Flynn. He wrote no novels, but he wrote some great nonfiction books, attacking Roosevelt, attacking the New Deal, attacking the road to war. But he also wrote some biographies of entrepreneurs and obviously very, very interested in the heroes of commerce.
Well, all I can figure is that in those days the bar was much higher for getting into print because, you know, you read his prose, you think, how come people can't write like this anymore? How come there aren't people around that can do a tremendous amount of research, know everything there is about a subject, and put it into dazzling English prose in a wonderful package that is, you know, easily digested by the regular person? I mean, that's rare. But Flynn did it. And his book, God's Gold, is a wonderful biography of Rockefeller. And then this great book called Men of Wealth. This book should be assigned in every business class, every class of finance or business history in the country, because it's miniature short biographies of great entrepreneurs throughout history, all the way back to the Middle Ages. And they're short enough, so you can really read them in the course of maybe each biography would take an hour of reading, but it leaves you with a great impression, you know, a vivid picture of a great wealth producer throughout history. So that's the book called Men of Wealth. But yes, just like Garrett, you know, the New Deal came. He saw what FDR was doing to the country. He followed FDR. He was almost like stalked him, you know, from a literary point of view. He knew everything about this guy, Country Squire of the White House. You know, he wrote in 1934 maybe. And then he became increasingly radical as time went on. Now, Flynn's own perspective adds something unique. You know, he saw the New Deal as being basically a racket cooked up by large corporations working together with the government to cartelize the economic system on their own behalf. So he was an old progressive, you know, who was opposed to mega corporations, always very suspicious of them. Well, you know, the New Deal, he saw was not just big government attacking business. No, it was business working and unions working with the state to cartelize the economy against small business and consumers. And that was his perspective.
Didn't Albert Jenock have the same view? We think of one of his wonderful books, you know, Our Enemy, the State, a great riveting, life-changing book. All these books have the capability to change your life. but Nock, what a writer. You're talking about writing ability.
Even aside politics, everything else, I think you're right. I mean, he should be considered one of the great essayists of the 20th century. I mean, it's hard to even think of anybody who compares, really. Now, he was a progressive, an old-line progressive from the 1920s, really a radical. Progressive is not the right word for him. He was a radical in the 1920s. And his book, I mean, he was the original editor of The Freeman, you know. And The Freeman was a radical publication. He used to distinguish between radicals and liberals. He said, liberals want to reform the state. We radicals want to overthrow it. We want to get rid of it and replace it completely. And yeah, he too, you know, met the New Deal and refined his ideological outlook. He was also different from Flynn and different from Garrett in the sense that he was an aristocrat. You know, he had this amazing education that we associate with the old world, you know, everything. I mean, he knew everything and he read everything in every language. So, and he had that demeanor, an aristocratic demeanor. Too about him, and he writes like that too. You have to stay with Nock. You know, if you read him, you just have to shut out the world and just sit down, turn off the music, shut up everybody around you, and sit with him and read him and let him teach you and let him talk to you, and you will be, you're right, completely transformed. A book like Memoirs of a Superfluous Man, this is adult reading now, right? But you never get over it. It leaves impressions with you that you never, you change forever after reading something like that.
And speaking of a book that would change you forever, what about H.L. Mencken's great book on democracy?
Well, now this is tough reading, right? I mean, this is not for everybody. Only if you're ready for it. It's very radical, and again, the Menckenian outlook, aristocratic elitist, you might say, right? But a true lover of liberty, and his book on democracy is called
Notes on Democracy.
It's called Notes on Democracy, right? So he lays out his whole theory of democracy, which he sees as being the road to tyranny, you know, he explains why, and it is an utterly and completely shocking book that would be especially relevant in our election season because, you know, there's nothing new. Everything we see around us now, we're shocked and horrified by it. We think, what have we come to? The decline, you know, is so obvious around us. And yet, he wrote this book, again, I think it was in the 1920s, but he had seen it all. And he knew everything that was going to happen. And he understands politicians like, you know, nobody else. Nobody writes. And of course, Mencken will make you something of a cynic. Or also, you could redefine that and say he'll make you very realistic.
Yeah, realistic.
This point about the relationship between the New Deal and World War II is an interesting one because I think most students today think of it, well, we had a depression, and then they bombed us at Pearl Harbor, so of course we had to go to war, and that helped the economy recover. Then the 1950s went on, and that's sort of their view of history. But, you know, you read the old right, you see that there is a direct, there's a continuum, really, between the New Deal and the entry into World War II. It's all part of the same statist, big government, big spending racket to get rid of American liberty and replace it with a form of central planning. You know, it was a continuum, and they all saw it that way. They saw it coming. They knew about FDR's drive to war. They were warning about it years in advance. They all believed he was a liar. So, you know, by the time the U.S. went to war, none of these guys were surprised. And of course they were all against it for the same reason they were against the New Deal. You know, because it was a catastrophe for American liberty and for the world. It really was. And they saw it and they explained why.
That's right. Now the dominant political movement is neoconservatism on the right, which means the new conservatism, of course. But talk just for a minute before we go about Murray's Betrayal.
Oh, yes. So, yes, well, there's only one book, actually, that explains all of this, and it's Murray's book. And this is a book that was circulating just really through the mails, you know, Samizdat or something like that for so many years. What, 20 years?
More than 20
years. It had been sort of passed hand to hand, and everybody said, look, all truth is in this book. And, and you had urged us to go ahead with this, and Tom Woods completed the editing. It was magnificent. And it came out, when did it come out? Last year. So he tells the whole story of all these, of how it is that we went from a movement of Garrett, Albert J. Nock, John T. Flynn, you know, Henry Hazlitt, Frank Chodorov, all these brilliant thinkers, to the movement we see today, which is just an embarrassment, really. I mean, from an intellectual point of view, an embarrassment.
No, there are no significant thinkers. no significant figures of culture, of high culture, or even of low culture.
Right. I mean, you read their columns, it's a disgrace, really. So yeah, Murray tells the story of this transition and what exactly happened, where all the, I mean, right? He opens the closets and all the skeletons are tumbling all over the floor. You know, it's just fantastic. I mean, so it's a great book to read if you really want to understand how we went from the world of Garrett to the world of that we see today of, well, we know what we see today. That's really the best book to read. And, of course, all of these books have been brought back now. And this is one of the exciting things that you've made possible with the Mises Institute is the restoration of all these wonderful old works so that anybody can get them now, you know, and learn from them. We're not talking about books. These aren't books that just fulfill some sort of perverse curiosity to know what was going on in the 1920s and 1930s or something like that. No, these books will teach you almost better than anything you could buy today what you need to know about economics, about politics, about war, and about culture. And they were all so good at weaving all these themes together. So these are the books that students ought to be reading today.
And what writers? I mean, I know Doug French tells the story when he was a student of Murray Rothbard's, asked Murray, if he wanted to become a good writer, what should he do? And Murray said, read Mencken. Well, I mean, you read Mencken, you read Nock, you read Flynn, you read Garrett, read Rothbard. It really helps you learn to write. Frank Chodorov, of course, another great figure of that movement, and Murray Rothbard's great mentor. And we've brought back two of his great books, too. So these are all extraordinary men, extraordinary thinkers, extraordinary writers. And if you're a libertarian, if you're feeling out of place in the current situation of empire, of endless war, of inflation, of depressions, of state propaganda, of increasing police statism, and you want to know that there was once a different sort of movement, a movement that we should all be grounded in order to try to make progress in the future, read these books. You can go to the store at Mises.org. Anything by Rothbard, Garrett, Flynn, Nock, Chodorov, Mencken, Hazlitt, Mises, they're all spectacular. This is our heritage. As Jeff says, this is the heritage that was deliberately suppressed, continues to be suppressed. But now, thanks to the Mises Institute, it's all back. It's there for you. Take advantage of it.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com. The best-read libertarian website in the world. If you'd like to advertise on this podcast or on the website, email advertise@lourockwell.com. And thanks for listening.